It takes a village to raise a child. We all know that, right? But what happens if you can't find your village? Because raising your child is really, really tough. What if you were so filled with shame and doubt and guilt and fear of judgment that you don't share your triumphs and your struggles? You don't talk about it because you don't think anyone can possibly relate. Well, I've been there, and it was really hard for me to find my tribe. So I decided to make mine. I went out and found these amazing mothers who are also in the trenches, struggling to raise their kids. Together, we are a community. And in this podcast, On the Hard Days, you'll find motivating stories from other real moms who get it. We're going to accept who we are and how we show up for our children each and every day, even on the hard days. Hello, my friends. I'm so excited to announce that I'm launching a newsletter. I love connecting with you guys through email, in my Instagram DMs, and in my Mothers Together community, and of course, here on the show. But recently I realized that I'd love to be able to provide you with a one-stop shop where I can share all the things, from products we use in my home, to accounts I follow, to personal stories about my life as a mom of neurodivergent kids. So my newsletter, called the On the Hard Days newsletter, of course, is the best way to do that. In addition to sharing pieces of my life and my favorites with you, this newsletter gives you the chance to share what's on your heart. I'll be accepting your original work, whether it's a poem, a piece of art, a short story about a recent win you had, or even a video of your original music to put into the newsletter. I'm also going to share your recommended self-care tips, you know, real self-care that's practical for moms like us, links to my new merch, and more. I'm really excited about this, honestly. The only thing I need from you in order to get the newsletter to you is your email address. So to send that my way, you have a couple of options. You can go to onthehardays.com/newsletter to put your email address there, or you can DM me on Instagram at onthehardays with dots in between each word and say newsletter with your email address in the message. The On the Hard Days newsletter launches soon, so get on my email list ASAP. As always, thank you so much for your endless support. I hope I can continue to provide you the same validation you guys give me. Welcome to Whitney Price. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Usually, yeah, well, that's so kind. Usually the listeners are always validated by the experience of moms that remind them of their lives and sound so familiar. So I'm looking forward to our conversation. Why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about you and your family?
So I have a little boy named Connor. He's 4 years old. He was diagnosed with autism when he was 2.5. My husband and I live in Parkersburg, West Virginia, and we both work at dealerships. I'm a finance manager, and he is a general manager over an auto group. And we always knew that we wanted to have kids, and we had started trying to have kids, I would say, pretty soon after we got married, and never would have guessed the journey that we would be on after having our son. So what a journey it's been so far.
Yeah. So what were those sort of early days like and early signs?
You know, I would say in the process of trying to have or trying to conceive, Connor was difficult. As soon as we started trying to have a family, I immediately got pregnant and miscarried about 9 weeks later. And no one really talks about the isolation of having a miscarriage. And I think that was probably the first time that I felt my heavy dose of isolation. I didn't know any other moms at the time that had miscarried. It was something that was kind of a bad stigma that you didn't really hear about. It was always, you know, we were taught more or less to view it as the mother's issue, or that the mother failed in some way. So that was my first dose of really feeling that isolation. And then jumping forward to 1.5 years after fertility drugs and many doctor visits, we were able to get pregnant with my son. And had a great pregnancy up until he was about 5 weeks old. We dealt with a lot of reflux issues, and we were in and out of the hospital a few times. And then at 3 months old, we dealt with him with the possibility of having absence seizures. And if you're unfamiliar with those, they are not like typical seizures. You don't have or you don't see the regular convulsions and things that you would see on TV. This is more or less just someone dozing off. And my son started doing that at a very early age. So we did an EEG. Luckily, everything came back fine. But at that point, we were set up with a neurologist. And then we noticed probably around a year old that the speech was very delayed. And at the time, he was in daycare. So he was around a lot of other kids. And it's easy to get lost in the mix when you're with, 20 other different kids in a room. And I guess other parents will kind of chime in and say, well, he's just delayed. My kid was delayed in some way, or my kid didn't talk until they were almost two. So we just kind of anxiously and patiently waited for the mama and dada and those first words. And he had a few basic words like hi, bye, and no, but those didn't come until around 18 months. And then the pandemic happened, and we were all set in a frenzy. And long story short, his daycare shut down. But right before it shut down, they had come in to do evaluations for birth to three, and they noticed that he was pretty behind as far as the speech went. So they signed him up for birth to three. And I don't know if your state has it, but it's a program for kids that are listed as either like developmentally delayed in an area that could be cognitive, that could be physical delays, and the state will come in and provide some services like physical therapy, occupational, or speech. We qualified for all of those, but it was during the pandemic. So we had Zoom meetings and FaceTime phone calls, and they were just very supportive of trying to see how they could help with his speech at the time. During that time, as things progressed, we were up to, I think, 10 words until there was complete silence. Now, we had him screened for hearing loss, and he was a baby that got a lot of ear infections. So we did the tubes and thought maybe he was not completely deaf, but just more or less like underwater, or maybe he was having issues hearing. So we did the tubes. Still nothing. He still had no words, went from 10 words to completely silent. No sounds, no naming, no doing animal sounds anymore, no calling for us. It was just complete silence, I would say, for a couple of months. Then we had him reevaluated by an occupational therapist. And at that point, this was probably 6 months later, there were other developments that we started to see, like constant jumping, walking on his toes a lot, a little bit of the arm flapping, hands constantly going. But Connor was not the textbook diagnosis because there was a lot of areas where he responded to his name, he made great eye contact. He was not, I guess, when they tell you about the red flags or the things to look for, we saw a few of those things, but they were also typical toddler things that you would see. So it wasn't until we had the regression that it started to stand out a little bit more. And then at that point, at the age he was 2.5, is when we finally were able to get in with a psychologist and they diagnosed him with autism. And from there, it has just been quite a journey trying to find resources, trying to find therapies in our area. Emotional support groups are something else that are, one in a million to find. And it's just been difficult. The state of West Virginia just does not have a lot, and our area specifically doesn't have a lot of therapies. We're beyond blessed that he has ABA therapy. In the town that I work in, which is so incredibly tiny, they just happened to open it up, and Connor was the first student to get in. So that was 2 years ago now. And when I say there is a crazy silver lining in our life that led us here, I don't know what your beliefs are, but I mean, everything lined up perfect for my son to be able to get the therapy that he needs in the tiniest, tiniest town in West Virginia. But something else that I wanted to mention as a side note, and thank you for, you started the mothers group that I'm a part of as well. And that encouraged me to push forward and start a social group with his school and in this community because there was nothing. We have nothing here. And the families that were able to not only support, but help give the knowledge to as far as the state funding that they would qualify for their child for is just amazing. So thank you for not knowing at the time, but you really gave me that push to go, okay, if they're helping this many mothers just over the internet, what should I be doing locally that I know needs done? And I just hadn't had the courage to step outside my comfort zone and just say, okay, we're going to start this. But so
Wow.
side note, thank you so much for doing that.
Well, thank you. But that's so awesome. That is so
Yeah.
awesome that you are doing that. And it sort of brings you that it brought the same to me, this feeling of there's a little bit of control. Like, I have control over nothing, but I
Yeah.
can help other people. And that does feel really good. That is so cool that you're doing that. Back to your journey. How did you do with the diagnosis, with the regression, with that whole time period?
You know, everybody has a vision of what their life is going to look like or what the hopes and dreams that you have, especially when you become a parent. You know, you wonder what your kid's going to be like. You wonder what personality traits are going to have from you, from your husband. And when we had our son, you know, becoming a parent gives you that love that you never felt before, of course. But when you start to go through the process of getting them evaluated, and then someone tells you, hey, they're a little bit behind in this area, and they're not even 3 yet, you start to feel a lot of pressure that you didn't know existed. And as a mom, you know, we have those maternal instincts of there's something not right with my child. And having that and pushing forward to advocate for not just him, but for myself. Hey, this child, I think there's something different going on. And at the time, we weren't sure if it was autism, because, like I said, he didn't fit that textbook diagnosis. There were so many things that could have been the maybes. And there's even other states that don't diagnose until a much later age because you don't start to really see them develop. And they are developing still during that time. But I feel like for us, it was just a, we went through a very, I guess, a sad period. You feel like you kind of lost part of your life that you were hoping to have. You go through a grief period. I definitely did. And I grieved in silence because not only did we deal with the diagnosis with no support, but you're worried constantly about the labeling and the stigma again. And that was the second time in my life that I really felt that isolation. So it was going all the way back to the miscarriage of, gosh, we shouldn't speak about this. And I don't want to tell anyone that I did this. Then going back to my son being diagnosed, it was like, okay, let's just not tell anybody because what if they're wrong? What if he, quote, grows out of it? You start, you know, going to Dr. Google and trying to see if there's a cure, if it's something that you could have caused that you could reverse. I mean, your mind just goes everywhere. And it took a heavy minute for us to accept it, but more or less try to find a way to let go of our own guilt. Like we had somehow caused that. And that took a while to overcome, realizing that this isn't my fault. This isn't my husband's fault. We are the first generation that we know of in our family to have a child with a disability or a diagnosis like this. And being able to open up to other people and then try to explain what's going on, what autism is, and It has been a long road and journey of accepting a new life, I will say, because every day changes. We don't know, and we try not to go too far into the future, because on one hand, you want to still have that hope. You want to hope that your kid is the next Elon Musk or one of those people that just have that special hidden talent that you see and you hear about on TV. But at the same time, you're still in a very intensive therapy where they do, every quarter there's an evaluation where you have to sit there and look at numbers and go, okay, we're still really behind in this area. We're still not to the level of him being able to go to a public school with other kids. Like, he still has to have one-on-one treatment. He struggles with being in a room full of children. So I would say it's more difficult in just coaching yourself into having the proper expectations while still being hopeful and knowing that you're doing everything that you can for your child, and your child is unique and different, but that's okay. So it's just all four of emotions, if you will.
Totally. It absolutely is. And unfortunately, that doesn't really go away, even when your confidence grows. And when you said earlier on, and you were talking about both the miscarriage and this, and you said, I did this. And it's so common, yet so hard that we as moms, especially, and often before your kid has a diagnosis, too, I must be doing something wrong. Like I'm a bad parent. It's clearly on me. But even after the diagnosis, what's in my genetic code? What could I have done differently? And that self-blame piece is so painful and so raw and so real. And so how did you transition from that to a more confident, on the other side of it, sort of identity?
Therapy helped. We along this journey had met people through his ABA therapy, and the center that he goes to actually has therapists working there as well. So it is a therapy center that caters to families, they cater to individuals, health and wellness. So we're very fortunate that we had met so many people through the center that I came good friends with one of the therapists here, and she's helped me a ton. And I would say, just, I don't know, during the pandemic, a lot of that silver lining was the self-help books that we had tried to read, or that I had tried to instill in myself, or, what do I want to do with my life? It was so scary during that time, and I was dealing with so much anxiety that I was reaching for literally anything and everything, just trying to find ways to remain calm during the chaos. And I think that really translated into dealing with my son, because you've talked about meltdowns before. They are on a different level. And I think if you're not a parent that's dealt with a child that can self-harm, that can harm others, or just completely go into a manic phase, it's quite scary. And if you don't have the tools to equip yourself, then you're going to be set up for a hellacious ride. So I would say it took a long journey of practicing mindful techniques of how to stay calm alongside with him, and just controlling my own anxiety with, I guess, different techniques. You can do breathing techniques, which we try with him. You can do mirroring. So the calmer I stay, the calmer he stays. And then I have to remind myself, this does work. There's science behind it. But practice it constantly. And that's hard. We do it a lot and we fail a lot. But we see a lot of wins where things could have turned into a meltdown that we were able to control and stop before they did. So patience is another thing. Having that patience, I was not born with patience. I'm that type A. I want everything in line. I want everything in order. Why do we have to sit and wait a half hour in the car for him to finish his cereal before we can go in? This life, you have to adapt to having a lot of patience and control of having that patience. If not, you can set him and yourself up for a big meltdown.
Yep, I agree with that. And it's very hard to do. I don't consider myself, I was not a patient person either. Especially because, and part of the type A thing is also a little bit of societal pressure. Like
Yes.
this is how you raise a child, and this is what this looks like, and this is the way behavior should be. And it's like, well, when you have, even if you don't have an actual diagnosis, whether you do or not, but when you have a child who clearly does not fit in the box, does that then excuse that child from societal norms? I don't know the answer to that. I think it depends on the kid, and it depends on what we're trying to, what's important here. Do they need to say please and thank you? Do they? Like, if you have a child, you're just working on getting them to speak, period. And the focus is shifts. And so I just think there's a lot of pressure, like you said, a ton of pressure. And I really think moms especially feel that in a way that nobody else does, and it weighs on you. What's life like now? What are your day-to-day, what does it look like in your home?
We are busy. We are busy 24/7. So we wake up. We get Connor ready for school. We drive about 45 minutes to get him to school, which I'm lucky though because my job is literally in the building right beside his. So silver lining again, it was there.
That's awesome.
He goes to school from around 9:30 to 3. I pick him up on my lunch break, take him back home, and then drive back to work until 7. And then I drive back home. My husband's usually home before me, so he'll get Connor's dinner prepped, ready. Then we spend some time with him, bath time, and then it's time for bed. And we do this, I do this Monday through Friday, and then I work Saturday too. So it is
Oh my gosh.
busy, busy, busy. We make a lot of sacrifices for him to continue to go to school. The crazy thing is the funding that no one talks about for these kids, besides Social Security, and it's so political, and I won't get into politics. That's not what this is about, but we just don't have the funding in our state or in our country for special needs. And because of that, there's so many kids out there that lack the resources because we just don't have any. So these kids need the therapy so bad. It can help so much. And early intervention is so important. But because of the lack of knowledge that people have and the lack of funding, I mean, there's families here that drive 2 hours to bring their kid to school. And there's such a wait list. And it's just awful what so many families have to go through. And it's not cheap. It's not free. This isn't a free school. We pay through insurance and then try to get grants on top of that. It is so expensive. And it's just, I don't know, it's just upsetting knowing how many families out there need this support and their children need this therapy and this education, and they're not able to get it because of the lack of resources. So I hope that our nation grows quick and is able to get these resources to these kids. It's so important.
So true. And the fact that there's these waiting lists, this is nationwide, every state,
Yes.
waiting lists for a year, 2 years. This is ridiculous. And the fact that there
Yes.
is a waiting list obviously goes to show the need. So like you said, what are we doing about this need? Nothing.
Yes.
And a lot of families, especially lower income families, they don't even know what their options are. They don't know what they
No.
don't know. In fact, there probably was a time, I guess, for everyone until somebody has to tell you, hey, there's this type of therapy. It's called this. You should try this. do this, read this, watch this. Until someone gives you that information, how would you know otherwise? And so I'm so with you, and it's not fair. It's not right for families, for children. You got so lucky having a place in a tiny town. That's crazy.
It was absolutely crazy. Our Birth to Three coordinator happened to have a friend that worked here that heard that they were having ABA therapy. Now, if you're not familiar with ABA therapy, it's applied behavior therapy, and they work on not just correcting the child's behavior, they're trying to teach a little bit of everything. So, my child is nonverbal, so they are incorporating speech, a little bit of occupational therapy, and then when they say behaviors, Connor is very, I would say, shy, but extremely shy. So having big crowds is something that we really struggle with. So those are the types of behaviors that they work with for him. But if you don't know anything about ABA, if you just Google it, you're going to see a lot of passionate people that were abused through ABA, or there were bad stigmas in the past. And had I not known this person personally, I would have said, no way, we're not putting him in ABA to do dog training therapy. Like, we're not giving him a treat to go to, point to colors and all that. Like, that's not even close to what they do here. But because of what you'll see online, the misinformation that is out there, misguided information, you will see a lot of hate towards ABA. And we are so lucky that I was able to schedule a meeting with the provider. We brought him here to be evaluated. It went so well. And just the whole atmosphere here was just so uplifting and just so helpful. Such a huge silver lining. If we wouldn't have been in the pandemic at that time with the Birth to Three coordinator that I had, getting this diagnosis when we did, I would still be on the wait list most likely, and I work right next door. I don't know if I would have even, I don't know what I would have done, because before this school opened, when we got the diagnosis, we put him on every wait list for ABA therapy, speech therapy, occupational. We were willing to get an apartment 2 hours away in Pittsburgh and drive and keep our townhouse open in Morgantown, just so the possibility of him getting in, not even having, a set spot, but we were willing to do that because, we didn't have any other option. And we knew if we didn't act soon or get him some type of help, what are we going to do? And I'm not a therapist, I struggle with that so much, because it's like, yeah, I want to be his mom. I don't know what a child with autism that's nonverbal needs. I'm still learning, let alone be able to teach him how to manage his emotions and meltdowns. And so it's just, I don't know, it's sad, and I wish we had more resources, but how freaking fortunate we are to at least have this school that's right beside us. We're very blessed, for sure.
I'm so glad that you talked about a couple of things, and one of them is ABA specifically. I don't have experience with ABA therapy, but I'm like you here from I see what's online, I hear from other moms. It is a very, very hot topic. In fact, as you're talking, I was thinking, do I even put that this conversation is partially about ABA therapy, because some people may not even listen to the episode because of those three letters. And then I'm like, well, that's ridiculous. And hopefully they do, because this is a great conversation. I don't know. I can't speak to what people have gone through, whatever. But what I do know is that there are so many moms whose children are in ABA therapy who say it's a lifeline.
Oh
And
gosh, yes.
I think this is great. I think the more that people are talking about the positive things that are coming out of ABA therapy for their children, the more we can break down that stigma, whatever, wherever it's coming from, and whatever the cause. And so it's safe to say that you guys have seen positive benefits. And like you said, you're not a
Yes.
therapist. So what do you, what, how would you even help your child grow without the support of other people, and this is the way that has worked.
I don't know what we would do without it. And when I say Connor is eligible to go to preschool right now, he's almost 5. He'll be 5 in July. So this upcoming year would be the year that we would sign him up for kindergarten. There is no way that I could put Connor in a special education class in our state with 12 kids and one aide and one teacher. There's no way. He would regress. The thought of it just makes me sick because there's no way that he would be ready. I don't care who you are. I don't care how long you've taught. There's no way that you could convince us, oh, he'll adapt. He has problems with 3 people in a room right now, let alone just shove him in there, a parent drop off where they have no idea what's going on. They would have no idea to do how to deal with his meltdowns. Yeah, I have no idea what we would do right now. But thank God we have this option because they're able to ease him into other kids that he sees every single day. He's finally playing and interacting a little bit with them, which is amazing. They'll do parallel play. He's developing those social skills, obviously, and it's all based upon his support needs. It's not this schedule that they would do in a typical public school where you go based off of their age. And you taught school. You were a teacher, right? So correct me if I'm wrong, it's all based off of the national grade and age level. So they would expect him to kind of I guess be along the same lines of any other neurotypical child at the age of 5. Whereas here, it's all based off of what are his specific needs, where do we need development right now? And there's no time limit. So they understand that, okay, he's may not be completely speaking. So we're in the middle of verbal and nonverbal. So he's not going to always respond to you, but at the same time, he can go and ask for snacks or tell you if he's got to go to the bathroom. And it's very catered to his needs versus just the nationwide chart of where he should be, which is just so helpful. Everyone here has their own individual plan. So it's not just this group of children that are all Connor's age doing the same activities. Every tech, and it's one-on-one training. They each have their own tech, and then you've got your teacher or your BCBA that comes around and spends time with each one of them every day. So I mean, there's, like I said, I can't imagine for my son specifically a better scenario for being taught.
Thank goodness that you have it, and that it's as a teacher, yes, a lot of that is accurate. Every child, we should be looking at the strengths and the weaknesses of every child and placing them there based on that, rather than they are 7, they need to do this because this is what we've decided that 7-year-olds do, and that has been. That's not where we are right now nationwide, but it's where we should be. So I feel that, and I agree with you. Yeah, there's no way he wouldn't thrive, even if he could make it through the day, he would not be thriving. They would not be able to work on his specific needs when you're trying to balance and manage a whole classroom with one teacher. And yeah, no, not at all. I would say, with all of this, overall, how are you doing? And what message would you give to moms who might be walking a very similar path as you and listening to this and really resonating with your story? What are the takeaways here that you would want to share?
Would say surround yourself with as many people as you can that support you mentally and emotionally, because there are going to be people along the way that don't understand, don't agree with your decisions. I know we had people in our family, we had close friends that didn't understand autism. So they went to their neurotypical side and said, we'll just send him to school, do the complete opposite of what you're doing, or you're not doing enough, or I read a book and I watched this movie and there's going to be a lot of negative. You have to find your own positive. And it's so imperative that you find those support groups emotionally and you find those groups, whether it be online, in person, through Facebook, social medias, they exist. You have to find them, but those are going to be your saviors. They really are, because those are going to be the people that help you navigate to the therapies that you might need, the support for your kids, and most importantly, your emotional support, because this journey is not going to be ending. This is going to be a lifelong journey that we have to navigate and figure out. There's going to be different roads, bumps in the roads, and I would say try to stay as positive as possible and understand that no one has the book to this. There is no handbook when you're dealing with a neurodivergent child. Everyone is different, just like you and I are different, and that's okay. And there's no right or wrong. It's all based off of your child. And you have to find that self-confidence to know that you are doing enough and that you are doing the very best that you can to set them up for success. But find that emotional support. Join that mother's group. It helps. It really does.
I love that so much. Just amazing. Are you open to people reaching out to you via like email or social media or
Absolutely.
yeah?
Absolutely. You can go through email if you want. My son's got a page on Instagram, ASD Life with Me, and we go through our struggles, but I tried to make it more of a diary of a mom going through this journey. So you get to see clips of my diary and what it looked like on diagnosis day, what it looks like every day with us, the good, the bad, the not so pretty. But yeah, absolutely reach out, because you have to have that support. It's so important to be able to connect with someone that may just listen and not give you any unsolicited advice and just say, yeah, we went through that, or yeah, I can believe it. And I think that's the way we get through.
Completely
So
agree.
again,
Yeah, go ahead.
thank you so much again
Oh.
for giving me that nudge. And just it'll impact so many people in such a positive way. And I've let my parents know that, there's extra support groups out there. I let them know that I had joined the mother's group and how neat it is to be able to talk to different people, not just from my state, but from different countries that are like, oh, we've dealt with this. This is what it's like in our country. And just it's just so very eye-opening. And I really do think that the bigger we get, the more we're going to be able to make noise about this and go to our state representatives, go to the counties and say, hey, this is needed. This is where the funding should go. And more kids are going to get that help. And more parents are going to get the help, because you and I need emotional support too. This is hard.
That was a mic drop. That is so, all of that is so true. So true. Very, very important. And I agree about making noise. We have to talk about it. We have to bring attention to it. And we need to support each other through it. And that's powerful just by itself. Whitney, this has been awesome. I have loved this conversation. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story.
Well, thank you for having me. Like I said, what an honor. And I've enjoyed having followed this podcast. And there was a need, and yours was the very first that I had heard like this. And I found you on TikTok, and I thought, oh my God, that very first one that I saw, I was like, this is it. This is what should be put out there. The right message, and so many. And I really do think that you could just take it and run with it, because there's so many things that we all go through daily that needs heard.
That is so kind. Thank you. That really is so kind. I appreciate you saying those things. Yeah, I agree. But you're doing the work too. We all are. And so, and that's where the community exists right here. So thank you so much. We'll be in touch, and I'm looking forward to getting this out into the world so people can hear your story. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. If you would like to talk with me personally, where we can chat and just get to know each other like old friends, I would love to do a discovery call with you. Go to my website, ontheharddays.com, and click on Schedule a Call. And if you're not already subscribed to this podcast, please do so so that you get the latest when they roll out. Not to mention, please leave a review if you feel like this episode spoke to you. That way, the podcast will be shown to more mothers. And finally, you can find me on Instagram at ontheharddays with dots in between each word, or in my free Facebook community, On the Hard Days Podcast and Community. If you are feeling isolated in your parenting journey, I encourage you to reach out through any of these means so that I can connect you with your people and support you in whatever way you need.